I'm talking about not covering every square inch of populated America with houses and strip malls until you can't even remember what happens when you stand in a meadow at dusk.
What happens in the meadow at dusk?
Nothing. Everything.
Everything.
Nothing. Everything. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Blue Dot, Episode 24, The Lassen Dark Sky Festival.
Welcome to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom.
And I'm Matt Schiltz.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. But it felt good to pretend for a second. Matt has moved to New York. I'm Nolan Ford, here to fill the big shoes he's left behind on Blue Dot.
As I recall, Matt didn't have that big of feet, Nolan.
No, but you know, I'd say average size feet.
Yeah, but we're going to miss Matt, but welcome aboard.
Thanks, it's good to be here.
Welcome aboard the good ship Blue Dot. You know, today we are going to be talking about the dark night sky at Lassen Volcanic National Park. Every year in August, around the time of the Perseid meteor shower, they have a festival called the Dark Sky Festival, and this year's is August 12th, that's a Friday, through Sunday the 14th, and we're going to be joined to talk about it by some of the star participants that will show you the stars, Nolan.
I'm looking forward to hearing from some of these guests today.
Yeah, well, first up, we're going to talk to the guy behind it all, Ranger Kevin Sweeney. He is the man under the iconic Ranger hat. How many years have you been doing this, and how has it evolved over the years, Kevin?
Well, hi, Dave. This is the fifth year of the Lassen Dark Sky Festival, and many parks hold similar festivals, but Lassen got started in 2012 with just a handful of volunteers and a few speakers and a couple telescopes, and we've seen interest in this event grow every year, and I'm really happy to see this year we'll have over 40 different events and lots of telescopes and lots of really dedicated amateur astronomers and scientists to talk about Lassen's dark night sky.
For someone who'd like to come up for just a day or the weekend, what can they expect to see and do?
Well, some really fascinating talks by those NASA scientists and some other astronomers. And we've got Junior Ranger Night Explorer activities lined up for the kids and some solar scope viewing during the daytime. And then once the sun sets, we'll have some really beautiful views of the moon and Saturn. And this year we have an excellent chance of seeing possibly dozens or even hundreds of shooting stars, because the Lassen Dark Sky Festival is happening at the same time as the Perseid meteor shower this year.
And I just quickly want to say that I was really enjoyed looking through the solar telescopes last year. So if you just come up during the day, you know, you still got some cool stuff to see and do, even if you don't want to spend the night.
Yeah, and safely through these specially designed telescopes, too. It's really neat to see the views of the sun from those.
How can we find out more and really get ready to experience the whole shebang, or at least some of the shebang? One of my favorite astronomy books is by Timothy Ferris. It's called The Whole Shebang, by the way.
Well, The Whole Shebang will be able to be viewed on the park website at nps.gov/LAVO. And we'll also be putting plenty of information up on the park's Facebook page, too. So we've just finalized the schedule, and that should be out very soon.
All right, Ranger Kevin, anything else you want to tell our listening audience to come enjoy the park during this centennial year?
Well, we have so many just really fun, great activities lined up to celebrate the 100th year of this incredible national park. And all of those, again, are listed on the park's website. So I'd really encourage listeners to go and see what we've got lined up. And the next thing we've got kind of coming down the pike is a really fun day in the park event happening on August 6th. More events coming, and it sure has been a fun summer up there at the park this year.
And if you can't remember the website, you know, just do what I do and Google Lassen Volcanic National Park, and there you go.
That'll work too.
Kevin, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
See you at the park.
See you then.
You're listening to Blue Dot on NSPR. Next up, one of the truly shining stars. See what I'm doing there, Nolan? Shining stars, that's pretty good, huh? Of the festival, David DeMaray from NASA's Ames Research Center in Mountain View. Dave, welcome.
Thank you very much.
You study astrobiology. Could you explain to me how that's a scientific discipline, even though we don't actually know of any biology beyond Earth yet, at least?
Okay, well, let me start with just a one-sentence definition of astrobiology, then explain about all the things that we actually can study and do. And that is, astrobiology investigates the origins, evolution, and distribution of life in the universe. And the key point here is that we seek to understand how life interacts with its environment. Okay. So in that sense, we're interested in just, and the fact is that we therefore have life on Earth, really, as since it's also in the universe with everything else out there, we really do have a some subject matter to start with, and it's not just because we know about it, but because understanding it really is a very important part of our search for life elsewhere. So we're really trying to understand life in the context of a solar system such as our own, a planet, and then more specifically a planetary environment. And in that sense, as we sort of figure out a strategy for trying to look for life elsewhere, we realize that we need to learn a lot more about life on the Earth. And there are certain aspects about life on Earth that that are really important for the search. Perhaps one example that's easy to give is just what is it about a planetary environment that makes it habitable? This word habitable is very important. You know, what is it in an environment that is needed to support life? And frankly, there's still a lot of science investigation going on Earth in terms of what it is that this planet does and what the sun does in order to sustain this environment that we take for granted. And so, you know, and the other point I want to make, a perspective, is that it was only 70 years ago when people got all excited about a radio forecast that said we were about to be invaded by Martians. You know, and they had visions of cities on Mars and very advanced civilization coming to the Earth. And then the real revelation of planetary science, space science, really, in the latter part of the 20th century, was when we looked beyond the Earth and said, gee, you know, there's really no place else in the solar system where we could live, where we could walk and breathe the air, and probably there aren't any really intelligent civilizations anywhere else in our solar system. Which really made for a sobering question is that, is there life out there? And if so, what would it be like? It certainly can't be like us if it's in the solar system. So this really put more of a focus on life early in the history of the Earth and what was early Earth like. And we quickly realized that early Earth and early Mars, for example, were a lot more similar to each other than they are today. So the real focus in astrobiology going beyond the Earth is looking at other planetary environments and trying to make an assessment as to whether they were ever habitable. And if so, where would we look on those planets? And so even though we haven't found life yet beyond the Earth, there's a lot of work to be done to give ourselves a fighting chance to find it someday.
And, of course, you're referring there to the famous Orson Welles broadcast of the War of the Worlds.
Exactly.
Now, yeah. You mentioned Mars, and you're really interested in looking for evidence for past life on Mars and perhaps, you know, now. Can you briefly give us the key findings from our rovers and orbiters that indicate that life may have gotten started on Mars?
Okay, yeah, the answer to that question really just picks up from where I left off on this topic of habitable environments. And that is that even though, you know, we haven't certainly have not found evidence of life on Mars yet, there are a lot of things that we have found and that relate to the question of what was the planetary environment on Mars like throughout its history. And the key point, which really was first hinted at by the Viking mission and some of the exploration during that period, that life, the environment on Mars was a lot different billions of years ago than it is today. Earth and Mars are about 4.5 billion years old, and there's evidence now that on Mars we had rivers, lakes, volcanic activity, just all kinds of things happening there, maybe on the order of 3 to 4 billion years or so ago, that look awfully Earth-like and, frankly, are the kinds of features that are indications that there was perhaps habitable conditions back on early Mars. And so then the question is, well, what kind of life could that support? And, of course, the answer is, well, most certainly microbial life, single-celled organisms. And, of course, we've got plenty of those on the Earth. And so more insights that we can get about how, you know, lakes or streams and volcanic activity can support life on a planet, the more insight we get as to where to look for evidence of life on Mars. So just some examples. We've now found evidence of lakes on Mars that had relatively fresh water, and the acidity or the pH was pretty neutral, just almost like drinking water, and that some of these features persisted for thousands of years, if not millions of years. So that's one exciting discovery, and that's principally Curiosity rover is the one that's really come up with the most exciting examples of that. Plus our orbiters, you know, that have seen lakes and stream features for decades, actually. The other one is that the Spirit rover found evidence in an area that had volcanic activity that there are actually hot springs and actually mineral deposits from those springs that are very much like ones that we see at Lassen or at Yellowstone Park. And on the Earth, these things tend to contain fossils. Of course, we have life everywhere on the Earth, but it's very happy to live in these hot spring environments. And so this really brings us then to our interest in Lassen.
Well, let's talk about Lassen Park. It really is a fabulous terrestrial analog and laboratory for you to utilize. Can you explain to us what is it about Lassen that draws scientists like yourself?
Well, what's exciting about Lassen, of course, are the processes that happen there and the landscapes that emerge from that. And of course, I'm talking about the volcanic activity at Lassen. Lassen is interesting because it has so many different types of volcanoes that in many ways represent the various types of volcanoes that we see in various parts of the Earth. But of course, what really excites us in astrobiology is how that volcanic activity interacts with the water. And of course, Lassen Park has an abundant water cycle, hydrologic cycle. In fact, that park is considered to be a key resource for snowpack and storage for water for use by California. But also, when that water interacts with the volcanic activity and makes these hot springs, it creates a perfect example of a kind of habitable environment that you might expect to find in another planet like Mars. And in fact, Lassen represents a modern-day version of what we found as ancient hydrothermal activity on Mars. So we can go there, we can see what kinds of processes go on to sustain that environment, we can study the microorganisms that are there, we can really understand the whole context that would surround an environment such as that, and how we could actually search for those types of features on another planet.
You're listening to Blue Dot, and we're talking to Dave DeMaray. He's going to be one of the guests at the Lassen Dark Sky Festival.
Dave, what are some of the highlights of what you'll be doing at the Dark Sky Festival?
Well, I'm going to be involved in two kinds of activities. One is a set of lectures to be given at one of the key sites at the park. And then secondly, we are going to have what we call an astrobiology booth with a number of features there. My lectures, first one is pretty much going to touch on what we're discussing here, and that is, astrobiology, what is it, and, what is our place in the universe and the kinds of questions we ask and so forth to understand life's distribution. Another lecture is going to be exploring Mars for evidence of life. And then, an amazing legacy of these Mars missions has been the photography, the imagery that has come out. And so I'm giving an afternoon talk in the visitor center there on just called Postcards from Mars, just showing some of the amazing images that have been obtained that are not only scientifically interesting, but it's the kind of stuff you might put on your wall as an image. And then the booth, we're going to show rock samples. We're going to have some scientific instruments, such as those that we've got on the Mars rover up there right now, and then some microorganisms and stuff, examples of some of these early life forms that might be closest to the kinds of features that hopefully someday we might find on Mars. This booth will be open on Saturday, Sunday from noon to 4, and also we have handouts for teachers and kids and so forth that they can take home.
And for you personally, what do you most enjoy about being involved with the festival and being under the dark night sky at Lassen Volcanic National Park?
Well, of course, being out in that venue is just a natural for talking about these things, just like it is for all the astronomy that's going to be going on. I like sharing the excitement of my work. I certainly like interacting with the enthusiastic and intelligent park visitors. I just really greatly enjoy the questions that I get and always have some good discussions there. And then, of course, learning more about astronomy. I mean, remarkably, even after working at NASA for 40 years, there's more that I can learn, too. So it's a learning experience all around for everybody who participates.
That's David DeMaray. He's the principal investigator of the Ames Research Center team of the NASA Astrobiology Institute, and he will be one of the main speakers at the Dark Sky Festival coming up the second weekend in August at Lassen Volcanic National Park. When we come back, we will talk to Sachindev Shenoy of the SOFIA Science Team. This is Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom, along with Nolan Ford. And we're back talking to Sachindev Shenoy. He's a science team member of NASA's Airborne Engineering Marvel, the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, also known as SOFIA, which is far prettier to say. Sachin, welcome.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your show.
You're welcome. I mentioned that SOFIA is an engineering marvel. For those of us who don't know about it, give us a brief explanation as to what it is and what the mission is.
Okay, so briefly, SOFIA is a 747 plane. So what we have done is we have taken a back of the plane, made a big hole in it. This is a big hole. You can drive a truck through it. We have a 2.5-meter telescope inside, and every night the plane flies up to about 35,000, 40,000 feet. We open up the shutters. We take observations of various astronomical sources, and then next day morning, we land back. It's a partnership with NASA and German Aerospace Agency.
Where's the home base airport for SOFIA?
The home base is in Palmdale. It's at Armstrong Research Center. The airplane usually is there. These days, though, it is down in New Zealand doing observation in the Southern Hemisphere. And the Science Center is based here at NASA Ames Research Center.
Now, last year, I saw you do a presentation at the Dark Sky Festival about how the telescope points in flight. And it just blew me away. I mean, how do you keep a telescope trained on an astronomical target while you're flying in a 747? Can you give us an explanation of how that works?
That's an excellent question. In fact, many people get confused about how is it possible that you're flying at the speed, you know, about 500, whatever speed the plane's flying, and you can still manage to keep the telescope pointed at an astronomical sources, especially when we need really fine tuning when we are doing spectroscopy. So the way it is done is there is a flange that comes into the plane, which is connected to the telescope. This flange is surrounded by a huge bearing. This is a giant bearing. This is taller than a person, normal person. And this entire bearing is surrounded by an oil bath. So you could think of it as telescope sitting independently of the plane because there is a thin layer of oil that separates the plane body to the telescope flange. And we also have three gyros. So once you put these systems on, the telescope will point at an object, and no matter what happens to the plane, the telescope will keep looking at this source. So even when we have jitters and when we have turbulences, the plane will be moving around, but the telescope doesn't move. One way to think about it is it's that telescope is fixed in space and the plane is going around it.
That's absolutely amazing.
It is. I've been working with this mission for now 4 or 5 years, and I still get impressed that we can do this. This is really a great engineering marvel, I think.
You know, I was looking at the internets the other day, and made the mistake of, you know, wandering around on YouTube, and I saw there was a little video claiming that, you know, there really is no Hubble Space Telescope. You know, they can't really do that. It's just this telescope they stuck in a plane that they fly around, and they were showing pictures. They had video of SOFIA, and I said, oh my, I cannot believe this. This is ridiculous.
It is beautiful. It really is beautiful. And you have to see it to believe it. So sometimes we do have open houses, like sometimes in Armstrong Research Center or at NASA Ames, the plane comes down here and we let people go in and take a look. But most of the time it's only scientists and engineers who fly on it. Imagine you're basically taking a whole ground-based observatory up to 40,000 feet, do the observing, and bring back. And we do this every night, three times in a week.
When's the last time you were on a mission?
Last year.
And what was?
But I'll be going back up there in October. In October, we are flying an instrument called FlightCam, and I support that instrument, so I'll have to go and fly in the October series.
Have to go. It sounds tough.
For me, it is more like I'm still doing my regular observing. It's like the whole night you're observing. So it doesn't feel much difference in terms of the work I do, but I'm doing it at 40,000 feet, which is cool.
Sachin, what will you be doing at this year's Dark Sky Festival?
So this is my second year at the Dark Sky Festival, and I do a couple of things. I'll be doing two sessions of Ask an Astronomer, so people can come. This will be at the Loomis Auditorium. So they'll sit there and they can ask me anything they want. And I'll try to answer it to the best of my capabilities. It doesn't mean that I'll answer all the questions, because of course I don't know everything, but you know, I'll try to be as precise and as careful as possible. That's one of the things. The other thing I do is I hang out with my friend David outside at Loomis Plaza, where he does science demos, and I do demonstration of infrared cameras, teaching people and kids and visitors what's the differences and similarities between visible observing and infrared observing. I also tend to do make your own comets and show people how comets look like, or what comet consists of. So those are the few things that I'll be doing this year.
What do you most enjoy about being at an event like this? And do you get to go out and explore the park a bit?
Oh, I love going to events like that, because this is where I meet people who are interested in astronomy, physics, whatever. And this is my way of giving back. You know, we are the science people who do science. We are funded by the government. I mean, we are funded by taxpayer money. And this is my small way of giving it back to the public, to tell them about the grandeurs of our universe, you know, how beautiful it is and what all we see. So for me, it is going back and talking to people. And there's also a selfish reason, because when you do these kind of things and you're talking about different things, people tend to ask a lot of questions. And you don't always know the answers to it. So those answers that I don't know, I come back home and try to figure out, oh, what did they ask and how do I answer it next time? And so it's a learning process for me. I get to learn a lot. So I do enjoy going to dark sky festivals, star parties, and talking to everyone. As far as what I would do, yes, I would like to explore the park a little bit. I love hiking, so I'd go out and hike. I'm also a bird watcher, so I'll probably end up doing a few bird watching walks around the park. So that's about it, I think.
Sounds great. Sachin, thanks.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Sachin Dev-Shenoy is a scientist with NASA's SOFIA telescope, and you can catch him at this year's Dark Sky Festival at Lassen Volcanic National Park the second weekend in August. He'll be at the Manzanita Lakeside up Highway 44 out of Redding. That's the Loomis Museum.
Next, we were talking to Gigi Giles. She is a NASA Solar System Ambassador and, of course, part of the Dark Sky Festival. Gigi, welcome.
Hi, Nolan. Hi, Dave.
Tell us briefly a bit about what a Solar System Ambassador is, and how did you get that gig? Because it sounds really fun.
It is fun being a Solar System Ambassador. The Solar System Ambassador program is a public outreach program of Jet Propulsion Laboratory and NASA, and there's hundreds of Solar System Ambassadors across the country. And we're motivated volunteers of all kinds. Solar System Ambassadors talk at museums and do star parties and work with children's groups, just whatever they feel they're best at, whatever their niche is. And you can be a Solar System Ambassador too. The program accepts applications each September.
Of course, the big story for NASA this summer is the Juno mission to Jupiter. Will we be talking about that at the Dark Sky Festival?
Yes, and I love this mission. The Juno mission is the first mission to Jupiter in 10 years, and we're going to get to see all new images of Jupiter, which is so beautiful with those colorful belts and zones and the great red spot. And the Juno mission is unprecedented. It's specially designed to study Jupiter's interior and its aurora, and those cloud tops. One thing that's really nice about understanding how Jupiter formed is that it helps us understand how our solar system formed and how our Earth came to be the way it is. And Nolan, an especially important thing to note is that the public is involved in this program. The NASA and the Southwest Research Institute has designed the JunoCam, the camera program, to be one that where the public will discuss and choose targets for the camera, and they'll be able to vote on what the camera will be pointing at and what kind of images will be taken, and then we'll be able to process the downloaded data.
Gigi, one of the things I most love about being at Lassen anytime is the experience of seeing the Milky Way and just the beauty of a night sky. Why do you think it's important for people to get that experience of half the park is after dark?
I think that when you're at Lassen and you realize how our planet is changing, that it's important to remember that our planet is just one planet in our solar system, which has eight planets. And, of course, our sun is just one of hundreds of billions of stars in our galaxy. And then our galaxy is just one of countless galaxies in the universe. And so if we only study and look at and enjoy the planet we stand on, then we're missing the whole entire universe.
Well, for someone who may be thinking about coming to the park this year, maybe on the fence, give us your best sales pitch. What can you tell us to make them want to go?
Nolan, this festival has something for everyone. It has activities for children. It has things in the day, things going on in the night, presentations and stargazing and sun gazing, and things to do whether you are a beginner stargazer or a full-blown space geek. And I get excited just thinking about going back to the Dark Sky Festival myself, and I know many of the other people who are involved look forward to this all year. So it's something that we all look forward to doing, being under these beautiful dark skies at Lassen.
Gigi, thanks so much for coming on Blue Dot and talking to us about the Dark Sky Festival.
Thanks, Nolan. Hope to see you there.
Gigi Giles is a member of the NASA Solar System Ambassadors, and she is based out of Lake Tahoe.
Well, Nolan, what do you think? Want to go camping with me at Lassen Park for the Dark Sky Festival? You bring the beer.
I think it's safe to say you can sign me up for that. I'm convinced this is going to be a great event that you don't want to miss it if you can make it.
It's a lot of fun. And the thing that always comes back to me of going up there for years, since the beginning of the festival, but especially the last few years, is there's something so beautiful about that sky. And I can't exactly describe it on the radio. It's just this deep, dark, bluish black that's so clear, and the stars are so steady that it's just, they look like jewels set against black velvet, and it's fabulous with the pine trees and the evergreens, you know, that just, it's a beautiful place to be. You're just walking through the campground on your way to go look through the telescopes, or even if you don't want to do that, just walking around under the dark night sky, seeing the stars, it's a really nice experience. And people need that kind of connection, I think. Spiritually, it's good for your heart just to be out under the dark night sky. We want to thank our guests, Dave DeMaraye from NASA, Sachin Shenoy and Gigi Giles, and of course, Ranger Kevin Sweeney from Lassen Volcanic National Park. Blue Dot is a production of NSPR, and you can check out podcasts on mynspr.org. You can follow us on Twitter at NSPR News and me at Dave Shlom. And as always, I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.